Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is the Healthy Mind Podcast. Here, we talk about our emotional health and well-being, about living the most authentic life we possibly can, the one we truly deserve. So take notice. Our true strength and action are on the march, while our fears and self-doubt are on the run. Never doubt how truly powerful you are. Let's learn together, right here on The Healthy Mind. Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is The Healthy Mind Podcast. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. Hope you're having a good week. We are in smack dab in the middle of this series on existential psychotherapy. And if you're listening to the podcast for the first time, well, welcome, first of all. But what I have been doing over the last few weeks is reviewing some of the basics, if you will, in my area of interest, existential therapy, existential psychotherapy, and really talking about the basics, at least what I believe, the basics of what really moves us all in our behavior, these deep human existential issues, freedom, meaning, isolation, and death. These four forces are the forces that move all of our behavior, both the healthy behaviors and, for some of us, some of the maladaptive or the unhealthy behaviors as well. And what I've been doing over this series is talking about each individual major existential concern. Now, if this is the first time you're listening, like I've said before on this series, you can listen to any one of these in any order. You can listen to this one today, go back, listen to the introduction or the last podcast that was done on freedom. They're all designed to be completely independent. So you're not really missing anything if you stick around and listen to this. And if you like what you're hearing, go back and listen to the entire series. But I'm really glad that you're here. This week, what we're going to be talking about is the topic of isolation, existential isolation, or that aloneness, that feeling that no matter how hard we try, there is an unbridgeable gap there between ourselves and another person. We'll talk about how that affects us, the way that we cope with that, and the power that love has, love of all things, to help bridge that gap. So the topic of existential isolation today on The Healthy Mind, I'm really happy that you're here. So, are you ready? Let's begin. Okay, now, as I've been talking over the last few weeks, these major forces come principally from the work of a great existential therapist and psychiatrist by the name of Irvin Yalom, Dr. Yalom. I'll quote him quite a bit and have already in this series. He wrote one of the masterful works in this subject called existential psychotherapy many years back, but it still is an absolute classic. And as we've been talking about these major forces, today we've come upon the topic of existential isolation. And what does that mean? What does existential isolation really mean? And how does that affect us? Well, before we go there, I want to talk to you a little bit about the degrees of isolation, okay? I'm going to set this up, and I think it'll make it a lot clearer then to understand what we're talking about in existential isolation, what it means, and how we feel it. But when we look at the degrees of isolation, they can show up in three different forms. The first is interpersonal isolation. The second is intrapersonal isolation, and then what's known as existential isolation, kind of the springboard of where we are going. Now, there's a beautiful quote by Dr. Yalom to start this off and describe the differences here. Listen to this, quote, "These types of isolation are similar subjectively. That is, they may feel the same as and may masquerade for one another. Frequently, therapists mistake them and treat a patient for the wrong type of isolation." End of quotes. And here, as I had described in some of the earlier series, the impetus really for doing this podcast series was for a class that I had lectured to the psychiatry residents at Ohio State University. So this is literally what I was talking to them about and had taught them. So you're getting kind of a firsthand view here of existential psychotherapy as I teach it. But let's look at these three types of isolation. First off, interpersonal isolation. And that's really what we generally feel. It's generally experienced as loneliness, right? It's our isolation from other people. And there's very different reasons why people may become isolated from others. It could be that they have inadequate social skills. There might be conflicted feelings about intimacy and engaging in a relationship. It might have to do with having a certain type, a limiting type, if you will, personality style that doesn't allow you to form those bonds. And also geographical locations and conditions may impose a sense of isolation. But make no mistake, loneliness and isolation on an existential sense is one of the greatest dreads of our time. And most of us fear it. We don't have a whole lot of comfort there. And here's a very interesting quote by Dr. Yalom on this idea, and I think it'll make a lot of sense to you. Quote, "The decline of intimacy sponsoring institutions, the stable residential neighborhood, the church, the local merchants, the family doctor, all of these has, in the United States at least, inexorably led to increased interpersonal estrangement." End of quotes. Pretty powerful. And I think here in that spirit, I would add that it's probably why in today's world where we have the ability with technology to stay connected to each other daily, despite this, we feel more alone than ever. Now, going on to the second type of isolation, that was interpersonal. This is intrapersonal isolation. And this is a widely used term that talks about really psychopathology. And what Dr. Yalom used this term for was basically describing how a person avoids being in touch with their own feelings. And one of the main ways that we do it in an unhealthy way, if you will, is repression. We push down these feelings on an unconscious way to not allow them to be expressed. Listen to what he says. Quote, "Intrapersonal isolation results whenever one stifles one's own feelings or desires and accepts oughts or shoulds as one's own wishes, and distrusts one's own judgment or buries one's own potential." End of quotes. And here, certainly in some of the work that I do every day, but especially in some of the work that I do in those individuals that suffer from some of the pain syndromes that are generated from emotional conflict, the psychophysiologic disorders, or the TMS that I talk about here. The goal with these individuals is really to help them to find those walled off parts of themselves and integrate them back into who they are. People stuff their feelings, and in stuffing them, they're not aware of them. They don't even realize where these bubbles of anger or rage or anxiety come up. And this is our role, at least on the intrapersonal level, to help a person become more in touch with their feeling. So intrapersonal isolation. Now, where we're going to go for the rest of this week's podcast is going to be with talking about the third type of isolation, existential isolation. Okay, Peter, what is this existential isolation that you keep harping on? Well, when we talk about existential isolation, it is that unbridgeable gap between yourself and any other human being. And on a more basic, on a more fundamental level, a separation between ourselves and the rest of the world. We see this quite often in practice, and a lot of times in the chronic pain patient, someone who's got a lot of discomfort. In fact, that's an example that I'll often give to people so they understand this concept of existential isolation. I'll say, well, kick yourself as hard as you can against the wall. Just smack your foot or on the table as hard as you can. That'll hurt. You know what that pain feels like, yet no one else will feel that pain or know exactly what you're feeling. It's all yours. And that is how I try to explain that unbridgeable gap. We are, no matter how close we are to each other, we are in our own world. And that can be very stifling or anxiety-provoking when we think of those implications. Here's what Yalom says about it. Quote, "No matter how close each of us becomes to another, there remains a final unbridgeable gap. Each of us enters existence alone and must depart from it alone. The existential conflict is thus the tension between our awareness of our absolute isolation and our wish to be a part of a larger whole." End of quotes. We see it everywhere, all of us. Now, as I've said on all of these podcasts, what I'm talking about here is part of the human condition. All of us feel the pull of these ultimate concerns or great existential anxieties of isolation, of meaning, of freedom, and of our mortality. So we do not escape this simply because you happen to be a therapist or a psychiatrist and you do this for a living. And I think that that is really where the heart of existential therapy is one-to-one. There is no power dynamic there because in the way that those individuals come in to see us and are struggling with these existential concerns, that's their unique way. But all of us have to face this. So I try to shy away from a character flaw or some type of flaw that a person has just because they may be depressed or anxious. I think that's really important here for us. Now, existential isolation hides everywhere in our everyday life and routines. And according to Dr. Yalom, on the importance of isolation as one of the main existential anxieties, he believes that when the individual confronts the ultimate concerns of death and freedom, this can lead a person to the domain of isolation. Now, the same type of process can occur when you go through a catastrophic or traumatic event and it pulls you into that sense of isolation. In essence, where everything that was once considered safe and predictable and permanent and precious and good can be taken away in a moment. It vanishes in a second. And that can be very difficult for any of us. Listen to how he describes it. Quote, "In the face of nothing, no thing or no being can help us. It is at that moment when we experience existential isolation in its fullest." End of quotes. It's pretty powerful. All of us face it. We have those moments. We may not even realize what it is that we're feeling. It's an incredible phenomenon. And really, according to Dr. Yalom and those in the existential therapy field, there really isn't a solution to isolation. It's part of our existence, and we have to face it and really make it a part of who we are, take it onto ourselves. Because unfortunately, there are different ways that we will wall ourselves off from this reality, from this anxiety. It's not always healthy. There's a whole lot of defense mechanisms and the such that we will use against this existential isolation, because this isolation produces a very uncomfortable state emotionally, and it's not tolerated well by us when it is prominent. And Yalom believes that both the terror of our existential isolation and the defense mechanisms that we use to ease that anxiety are all happening in the unconscious. In fact, he feels that the fear of existential isolation is the main driving force behind many interpersonal relationships. Now, no relationship can completely eliminate that existential feeling of aloneness, but our aloneness can be shared. And what I'm going to talk to you about as we move along here is how love can compensate for the pain of isolation. According to Dr. Yalom, quote, love is the answer when there is no question, end of quotes. So here, as therapists, as we look at this in trying to help individuals, we need to be thinking of love as an attitude, something that is characteristic of the individual's understanding and orientation to the world, rather than in terms of the individual's relationship to the person or the object that they love. It's this attitude. And he warns that when someone's main motive, their primary motive in engaging other people in relationships is to ward off the loneliness rather than engage them on a deeper level, well, then somebody has transformed the other person into equipment. They're being used. And that never ends up well. Relationships suffer, marriages suffer, and people really struggle. He talks about a really interesting idea known as fusion isolation, where people will fuse to another person, lose themselves in another person, instead of dealing with these issues of existential isolation and facing them. And really to grow with our fears and our anxieties of existential isolation, it's this process of separating, of individuating, of being one's own person, of becoming independent. He talks about it in this way, quote, a dissatisfying state of fusion existence, or too early or too tentative emergence, leaves the individual unprepared to face the isolation inherent in autonomous existence. End of quotes. Now, in English, what he's saying there is if you fuse with someone or you have an experience too early or too frail, let's say as you're emerging, that can really hurt you in being able to individuate. And not separating means that a person really doesn't grow up. They don't mature into an adult human being. And separating and growing is the hallmark of confronting that isolation and becoming that individual that is strong and that can face that anxiety without feeling that they are going to disintegrate or just evaporate into the air. So let's talk a little bit more about this idea of fusion. We have to realize that one of the great paradoxes of increased self-awareness is that we will have anxiety. The fact that we are an individual, that we must make our path in the world. The responsibility is ours. On many levels, we are alone in this world, and that can breed anxiety, even though we are growing and understanding who we are. One of the ways that we cope is this idea of fusion. And fusion can eliminate the anxiety in a very radical way because it limits that self-awareness and that self-growth. The individual really isn't one with the other person. but instead they're using that other person as equipment to serve a function. And in that, a mutual, enriching, loving relationship and experience can never occur. So that's fusion. But here are other maladaptive ways that people deal with this. Deficiency motivation, meaning that this is the individual who relates to others from the point of view of their usefulness. And I love, again, how he describes this. Quote, "These relationships resemble our relationships with cows, horses, and sheep, as well as with waiters, taxi drivers, or others of whom we use." End of quotes. We're using people as tools rather than growing. And when we grow, we're less dependent, we're less beholden to others, and we don't need everyone's praise and affection. But it's hard. It's hard. Isolation is one of those key anxieties that will have people acting in all different types of ways. One of the ways is this constant searching for love. In searching for love, the individual escapes from that need to find themselves and deal with the isolation. They're looking for love all the time, and it's the wrong thing to look for. Not just love, but you've got to face these anxieties alone and then bring another person into the picture. So this constant search for love, existing only in the eyes of others, is another way. A person needs tons of affirmation to feel alive. So he's very dependent, or she's very dependent on what others think of them. Other ways that people deal with this is enduring or entering into unsatisfactory relationships or even bad relationships because they'll sacrifice happiness for an illusion that one belongs to someone or to somewhere and it's not real. And how many people struggle with difficult or bad relationships or unsatisfying relationships for all different kinds of reasons. But these core anxieties make up a lot of the reason that people stay in relationships. Compulsive sexuality can occur. You feel alive because you are with somebody else, but it is fleeting. And it leaves a person wanting more. So again, they search out these sexual relations. And a common way too, very interestingly, is putting the needs of others first. Someone may put their family or their children or their friends or a job, a cause first. And in this case, if you put the needs of others first, perhaps to the detriment of yourself, well, you use that as a means of avoiding the sense of isolation. If I can keep giving to others, makes me feel good, but I'm running from that which I fear. And we see this so much, both in terms of depression, we see it also as a major component in those that struggle with some of these psychophysiologic disorders and pain syndromes, pleasing personalities or caring personalities, the pleasers. But yet, the reason for that is not from strength per se, but it can be coming from a profound fear or anxiety. So it is important to acknowledge that anxiety and begin to self-actualize in this concept of existential isolation. It's the human condition. We all face it. But when people extend themselves continuously in an authentic fashion towards others, really moving towards the relationship rather than escaping into something for fear of the underlying anxieties, well, they're going to be able to reach out to others in true love and caring rather than grasping someone out of desperate need or survival. It's an important point. Love is not a specific encounter, but it is an attitude. And the problem of not being loved, and I believe it, is more often than not a problem of not loving, not being able to love yourself. So what do we do? What do we do as therapists here to help people? Well, Dr. Yalom really strongly endorses the notion that an authentic relationship must develop between the therapist and the person who comes in to be treated. And this is where I find him the most brilliant in his assessment. Listen to the beauty in this passage. Quote, "The powerful temptation to achieve certainty through embracing an ideological school and a tight therapeutic system is treacherous. Such belief may block the uncertain and spontaneous encounter necessary for effective therapy." End of quotes. The actual therapy technique is really not what heals people. It may to some degree, and you need to be trained and understand how to help people. But the healing comes in the authentic and real relationship that develops between two individuals in the therapy session. Listen to this passage. Quote, "The therapist, out of the depth of the relationship, helps the patient to face isolation and to apprehend his solitary responsibility for his own life. That is, the patient who has created his life predicament, and that, alas, is the patient and no one else who can alter it." End of quotes. Now, we've got to be careful as therapists, because people will often attempt to deal with these feelings of isolation and anxiety by trying to fuse with the therapist. And we've got to be careful. We have to be aware of our frailties, of our humanness, of the struggles that we face. So we need to be able to understand where we stand with all of this, and also to help individuals confront this isolation. Might cause some anxiety at first. How can it not? But ultimately, what you get is personal growth. When people grow in psychotherapy, when they grow along this existential framework, they learn not just the rewards of intimacy, but also the limits of intimacy and what you can get from it. And that can be even more important than the intimacy itself. They learn what they cannot get from others. Back to Dr. Yalom. Quote, "Optimally, he or she learns from the fullness of the encounter that the patient and therapist and everything else are brethren in their humanness and their irrevocable isolation." End of quotes. We're all in this together. The most important thing in the therapy session from the therapist is authenticity. That is the critical, critical point in the relationship for the existential therapist. Authenticity, not necessarily psychotherapeutic techniques. When psychotherapy technique is made the most important thing, paramount, everything is lost, because the very essence of an authentic relationship is that an individual does not manipulate, but turns towards another person with one's whole being. This is so important here. Authenticity. Letting the person know that you struggle with these issues as well. It's not about you. Self-disclosure is important, and I'll end on that on today's podcast. Dr. Yalom is a huge believer in self-disclosure. In fact, what he would say, it was oftentimes those, what he called throw-ins, where he might talk about himself or his days or some of his struggles, that actually were the healing aspects of the therapy session. Brilliantly stated in the following quote, quote, "There is every good reason to reveal oneself to the patient and no good reason for its concealment." End of quotes. But you've got to be careful here. Got to be careful here as a therapist, because the therapist's self-disclosure has to always be for the benefit of the patient. And this is why not everyone can be a therapist, or certainly a good therapist, because it's not easy. There has to always be a vigilance when you are with another individual in a therapy session. You're thinking to yourself, how much am I saying? How much of what is what I'm saying coming out of trying to figure out my own issues? How much am I bringing myself into this discussion because of my own issues, including self-disclosure? So we have to be very careful. I strongly believe in self-disclosure myself. I've done it throughout my entire career. But we have to be careful that it is always, always for the benefit of the patient. He sums it up very, very beautifully here. Quote, self-expression on the part of the therapist or total honesty or spontaneity may be a virtue in itself, but each is secondary to the overriding presence of agape or love devoted to the welfare of another. And this is where Yalom really felt at odds with the psychoanalytic movement, this transparency that was not present at that time within analysis. The stance of the therapist in Freudian analysis where they don't engage themselves into the session for fear of being swept away. Well, Yalom felt that the fear was unwarranted and had so much potential beauty when authenticity and disclosure was well placed. So much healing could come from it. Listen to this final quote that I will use today from Dr. Yalom on all of this. Quote, if therapist disclosure were to be graded on a continuum, I am certain that I would be placed on the high end. Yet I have never had the experience of disclosing too much. On the contrary, I have always facilitated therapy when I have shared some facet of myself. End of quotes. Strongly believes in that. And I would agree, that is where the healing comes. The amazing healing that can come from two people joined together in therapy on a journey of growth in an authentic fashion, in a way that there can be a discussion between two equals, two equal human beings to help a person grow. I would argue that we grow as therapists because we see the tremendous strength with the amount of adversity that people face, the anxieties, the depressions, the terrors, the fears, yet they dare to come in and face it and move through it, knowing that there will be more anxiety, yet pursuing it to find peace, to find healing, and to find growth. What an amazing privilege we have to be a part of that journey, because people are so, so very powerful. And it is important to remember all of this as we move forward to help those who entrust themselves in our care. I hope you enjoyed this week's podcast as we discussed existential isolation. Hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed putting it together for you. It was really a treat, and I have to tell you the truth. I have been blown away, as I said on the last podcast, of the support and the enthusiasm that really has been there for this series on existential psychotherapy. I would have never have imagined this, but it makes me feel so good to know that people are enjoying it and finding it of worth and, dare I say, helping them to the degree that it has. It really, really is fulfilling to know that. And I do appreciate all the positive comments that have been left, both on email, on some of the message boards that I am on Facebook. I really do appreciate your support and encouragement. It means the world to me. Thank you very much. I also really do appreciate those that have taken the time to rate the podcast in iTunes. I say it a lot, but you have no idea how much a positive rating can do for the reach of the show. So thank you all if you have done so or are thinking about doing. It takes just a second, and it's a beautiful way to support the healthy mind. I really would appreciate it. The website, as always, thehealthymind.com. You can follow me on Twitter. I tweet at Dr. Zafiridis. And any questions or comments, I want to hear from you. Keep sending those emails. They're wonderful. The email address is peter@thehealthymind.com. That's peter@thehealthymind.com. And for the Healthy Mind Podcast, part of the Healthy Mind Network, I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis. Have a great week, everybody, and I'll see you next time right here on the Healthy Mind.